put the resources into the hands of the people to increase the quality and benefits of their life. Let's remove the middleman. Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Dark City Compassion Club awaits you. It's your radio.
Oh, you're live, Sarah.
Is it gone again?
No, you're all right. We're live. Oh, well. Hello, everybody. We've been having a few, not technical issues. They're actually human errors. But we always call them, people like to say that they're technical issues. But welcome to Dark City Radio. You're listening to the Compassion Club show, the Dark City Compassion Club show. And we've got a brilliant guest on tonight, Michelle X. And we've had Michelle on before. She come on in July after she had been arrested for growing cannabis. Michelle is a medical user and has multiple sclerosis. And this is an unforgiving illness, really, multiple sclerosis. I've just thought I'd explain a little bit about multiple sclerosis and about that what it's. You know, the implications of having this disease are. So I'm going to start with that, and then I'm going to bring Michelle in so she can tell us a bit about her particular situation. And Michelle is a very well-known cannabis activist. She is one of our warriors, and she's very, very defiant in her in standing strong with what she believes. And, you know, us at Dark City really do admire Michelle and her courage and how courageous she is and how she does do this, how she does stand up for herself. We haven't known Michelle for very long, but we stand with Michelle and we support Michelle and do for Michelle whatever we possibly can, because I admire her strength. So her illness that she's got, multiple sclerosis, is a disease which affects the nerves in the brain and spinal cord. This causes a wide range of symptoms, some of which are problems with muscle movement, balance, and vision. These are some of them. Okay. All the nerves which are in the brain and also the spinal cord are surrounded by a layer of protein, and this is called the myelin and the myelin sheath. So it's in between all the nerves, okay, and it's vital. The job of this is protein is to protect the nerves, and it helps electrical signals from the brain. And these are basically your messages, you know, pain messages, movement messages, anything that your brain decides that you should do. Even reaction to heat, so if you burn yourself, so these are also messages. And so this protein carries the signals from the brain and travels it to the parts of the body. And this becomes damaged within people with multiple sclerosis and other motor neuron diseases as well. And it disrupts the nerve signals, which is causing these major problems, you know, with the muscle movement, the balance, and the vision. Loss of vision is a side effect, usually in one eye, spasticity, which is muscle stiffness, and uncontrolled muscle movements. So people with MS can get very, very stiff, or they can have uncontrolled muscle movements where their muscles are moving and they've got no real control over what's happening. Ataxia, which is difficulties with balance and coordination as well. This can be pretty detrimental for people, you know, when it just to make a simple thing like a cup of tea, you know, when you've got your balance and coordination completely gone, which can happen, it makes simple tasks that people like me take for granted each and every day. Fatigue, feeling very tired during the day. And as you can imagine, you are going to feel tired when your body's having to overcompensate for these difficulties. There are three main types of MS. Relapsing, remitting MS. 8 to 10 people with MS are diagnosed with this relapsing, remitting MS. Flare-ups or symptoms, releasing these can last for days or sometimes months, these flare-ups. It just depends on how far down the line you are with your MS. Secondary progressive MS, usually after 15 years, half the people with relapsing, remitting MS will end up with this one, and secondary progressive MS. Some may still have relapses without full recovery from the symptoms. And then there's primary progressive MS, and that's the least common form of MS, primary progressive MS. Okay, and these type of symptoms gradually get worse and with time with no periods of remission. So as you can tell from what I'm explaining here, once this damage happens between the nerves, it's horrendous for people. The symptoms and the pain and the suffering and everything that they suffer is really, really not very nice. So, Michelle, what yes. I'd like to start with first off is, you know, when did you get diagnosed with MS?
Well, thanks for having me on the show again, Sarah, and thanks for the great introduction and all the support I get from everybody as well. When did I first get MS? Wow, I was diagnosed in 1988, initially diagnosed, but prior to that, I'd gone blind. So I'd already had my first symptom of it by going blind, but they didn't tell me that it was MS then. They just said it was, they probably told me it was optical neuritis at the time, but I didn't really take that in. They just said it was nerve damage and that with the course of steroids and stuff and over time, it would come back. And they were right, it did. It came back over a period of a few months.
Okay. So what, because I was feeding back a bit there, what pharmaceutical drugs did they prescribe for you then for your MS condition?
At the time, they were on steroids. It was a steroid treatment that they were going for. So most of the treatments that they offered me for any of my symptoms were steroid based. When I got my next lot of symptoms with the spasms and I lost feeling from like the waist downwards in my legs, so I had no sensory feeling at all on my legs. You could stick pins in me and I couldn't tell the difference between the pins and nobody touching me. And the drugs that they put me on then were kind of like muscle relaxant type style drugs, amitriptylines. I wasn't experiencing much pain at that point, though, and they suggested that I go on trials, really, because that was the best way to keep up with lots of MRI scans to see any progression that was going on in the brain with scars that had formed in the brain. And also, if I was on a trial, then in my mind, I kind of trusted in my doctors and the system that they would find something that would cure me or stop my symptoms. But it didn't really work out that way. It kind of went downhill, really, because the drugs that they trialed out on me really weren't helping. If anything, they were making my symptoms worse, although I was responding to the steroids. The steroids were the one thing that I responded to, and I actually responded well with my MS symptoms as well. It was the side effects of the steroids that were so devastating, and the fact that it was such a false fix. And this is when I really got into steroids and how they affected a lot of the treatments I was on, because I'm also asthmatic and had been since I was 6 or 7 years old, and I was on a lot of asthma inhalers that were steroid based, and I responded to them too. But again, the side effects, lots and lots of weight gain. And yeah, the effects on my body and my organs were also quite detrimental, and I'm quite glad I'm off of those.
I've got a list here that you gave me, of the drugs that you have been prescribed over the time. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And people have got to bear with me because I'm dyslexic and I will pronounce some of these wrong. But Michelle, if you can pronounce them better than me afterwards, that'd be good.
Yeah.
Gabapentin. Carbamazepine. Yep. Sodium valproate.
Yep. Sodium valproate. Yeah, I'm going to pronounce that
just as well. Or phenytoin.
Phenytoin.
Baclofen.
Baclofen, yes.
Prozac. Amitriptyline.
Yep.
Tramadol.
Tramadol, and the tramadols are quite a good one, actually, going to the tramadols, because this is quite a good conversation I've had with people. When they first put me on the tramadol, they put me on these little capsules that were like a 50 milligram, and they were like, you just take one, then take two, then take three. And before I knew it, I was on like four, three times a day. So I went back to my doctor and I said, is it okay to keep taking these? And he said, yeah, you can take more. You can take up to six every 4 hours. And then he offered me a 150 mil slow release tramadol. Now, this tramadol seemed to work so totally different to the little tramadols that I'd been getting before, because they had this this extra high in them that just seemed to totally take away all of my pain levels, and I was in a really good place. But I was taking like up to two of these 150 milligram ones 3 to 4 times a day, which was close to, you know, kind of like crazy overdosey type levels. And I was so addicted to them. And it was like coming off of those was absolutely horrendous, the side effects from that. And this 150 milligram one, I spoke to some people that had actually been ex-heroin users, and they said that when they were on those, it was the only thing that gave the same results as actually getting a hit. It was the only thing that actually calmed them enough. So that tablet to me is incredibly dangerous if it can get people that hooked and have that many side effects. Even if it does limit the pain, it's having such a detrimental effect, because I can have the same effect using cannabinoids.
It's a man-made. Can you mute, please? Yeah, thank you. It's a man-made opiate, isn't it, tramadol? If I remember rightly.
Yeah.
And then you've got salbutamol.
That's an inhaler for asthma. Salbutamol, and yeah, it used to be called Ventolin, but they changed the manufacturing names back to the real names of the drugs, didn't they? Salbutamol and Becotide. Becotide is the other one, the brown inhaler. And then there's a pink inhaler, which the name of it doesn't ring to bell. Again, they're very high steroid-based inhalers as well.
Acyclovir?
Acyclovir. Acyclovir is a... As far as I'm aware, I discovered the acyclovir drug when I was reading up on HIV patients in their latest stages. And it was really good for cold sores. And one of the side effects I got from having all the other prescription drugs was that I got lots and lots of cold sores if I got stressed. They would just pop up out on my face, on my eye, just get them in my eyeballs. And they were very painful. They'd attach my nose to my lips. And I went to my GP at the time and talked to him. And I said to him, I'd read about this drug called acyclovir. And what did he know? And he said, yes, it's a small percentage that they use in the Zevirax cold sore cream, but if he could actually give it in a prescription in tablets as well. And I took those for quite a few years, and they controlled the cold sores very, very well, but I don't think they have a good long-term effect. And since I've stopped taking them, my cold sores have been quite under control. So I think that they were more of a combat to some of the prescription drugs that were causing my body to react with cold sores more than what it does without the prescription drugs in my system.
Yeah, there's a lot of drugs here, so your body's going to be working overtime to get them through your kidneys and everything else. Mm-hmm. And plus a lot of chemicals, not chemicals, because we're made of chemicals, everything's a chemical, even organic food is made of chemicals, really, isn't it? Everything's a chemical, but you know, when you're taking a lot of medication, it can just change the pH and everything of your stomach, and kill a lot of the good bacteria in your stomach. And as soon, and especially with all of these antibiotics as well, you know, 80% of your defense, your immune defense, is in your stomach. So if your stomach is being bombarded with antibiotics all the time, you can imagine that the environment there is ideal for bad bacteria to grow, but not for your good bacteria to grow, and not good for your immune system at all. You know, yes. That's your first line of defense, and that's just been totally attacked by all these antibiotics and other drugs as well. And it says here as well, B12 vitamins, which VGPAC 12 injections, which I can see was probably pretty beneficial in a lot of ways as well.
It was, every 3 months. It used to get to the point where I could tell at 2.5 months that I needed the injection. Yeah. Which I don't have to have anymore now that, you know, you get onto a better healthy lifestyle and you don't need to. You can replenish those things naturally.
And then you've got doxycycline.
Doxycycline is a prescribed drug for chest infections, for a bacterial infection for when I had pneumonia. And it seemed to work on me to get rid of my pneumonias very well. Because the other antibiotics kind of stopped working after the age of 40, I suppose. which is quite common, so my GP said. The doxycycline was the only one that really worked, but the side effects on that one turn you into a vampire. You can't go out in daylight at all. It just hurts to even look at light. Everything is just really, the skin feels super, I mean, it feels sensitive all of the time, but when you're on those kind of prescription drugs, if you've got a chest infection, you know, you really are battling against so many other side effects at the same time. It's very unfortunate, but they work. You know, they did cure the chest infection that I had and cleared it up. But to me, I'm now more of a prevention rather than the cure. You know, I shouldn't have been shallow breathing enough to have got that infection. Whereas, you know, because my asthma was much worse and I wasn't controlling it. Whereas now I don't use the inhalers because I've got good bronchial dilators. So I can keep my lungs well inflated all the time and cough up any phlegms that I have with my asthma before they become a problem and sit in the bottom of my lungs. You know, breathing. People say to me, what's a big tip? Breathing. Literally, that is it. Breathing in and breathing out and making sure you breathe out for more counts that you breathe in. It's such an easy tip to give people to clear lungs and to help well-being.
Oh, definitely. Helps well-being loads. And I, you know, I'm not reading this list out because I'm against pharmaceutical drugs. Quite the contrary, I've used antibiotics in the past, like for ear infections and things like that. You know, if I'm, you know, I'm not against any industry or any, you know, just I don't like things being pushed, that's all.
Yes, I totally agree. Yeah.
You know, I think everything has its place, you know, and you just, it's about learning what works for you, really, isn't it? But what I'm trying to get across here, right, is what did it actually feel like for you? Do you want to go into some of the symptoms that you were feeling at this sort of point when you was in this cycle of doing all the tablets, all the pharmaceutical drugs, you know, how it felt on an everyday-to-day life? Because I know that you found it really hard and you know, at some point you say you've even lost your lust for life, you know, your will for life and, you know, you lost track of your path and you'd stopped caring for the world you lived in. And, you know, so what was it like for you on a daily basis? And I mean all the physical symptoms as well. I really want to get across the point of what it was like for you before cannabis, you know, what the spasms were like, what the pain was like, you know, how you were sleeping and the depression that you was going through. Can you try and portray that so that people can really understand what your life was like before cannabis, please?
It was completely fake. That's what it was. I would sleep all day to save up a tiny piece of energy to be happy in front of somebody so that they would believe I was okay. And then I would go and shut myself behind doors and just cry and cry and just suffer on my own, because I felt that other people seeing me in that state was more devastating to them, because I knew from the doctors that there was nothing that could be done apart from what was apparently being done. So I became this fake person, almost like a split personality. And to be truthful, Sarah, I'm still that person now, because I suffer every single day. Every morning I wake up between 4 a.m. and 6 a.m. with sharp, sharp spasms in my legs, spasms and cramps causing my thighs to straighten out like I've been zapped with electricity charges. That's just good morning. Now, this is in a stage where I'm actually controlling my disease now. So to actually think back to how it was, it's like it's still there with me all the time. And although I put on this big smile of like, I'm looking at the positive side because that's the only option I've got, because I have to play the cards in my hand. I cannot go backwards. All the things that I have learned about how cannabis has benefited my body is tenfold, because now, like being a woman, for example, I'm on a 28-day cycle, as most women are. And when I was on the prescription drugs, I would probably get a 7-day out of those 28 where I actually felt like I didn't have to wear incontinence pads, that I didn't have to feel that if I laughed, I would make a mess in my knickers, because I had control of my bowels. Now I have control of them because I'm not on the pharmaceutical drugs. But when I was on their drugs, the muscle relaxants were so muscle relaxing all over that they just muscle relaxed in too many places. So other symptoms became more pronounced. So I'd have like 7 days where I could do things that were nice. The rest of the day, it was either constant stomach cramps. Again, like you said, with all the different drugs that were in there, that I was constantly fighting what I'd eat, what I didn't eat. My weight would go up and down. If I was heavy, it was harder to move around. Breathing is incredibly hard. Sometimes just chewing food and swallowing it. But it's the symptoms that are there that are invisible that people don't see. Waking up in the middle of the night, drowning on your own phlegm because you can't swallow. You know, there's no way that you can swallow anything. You're just drowning in your own fluid. And it's the most terrifying thing ever. Out of all of the symptoms of the cramps, the blindness, the loss of legs, the being in a wheelchair, the having to be carried to toilets, the not being able to feel my arms at all, not being able to even lift your arms up. They are so heavy and feel like they're full of concrete, or that they're so cramped up and they're pulling into you like you're being pulled from the inside, strings drawing all your limbs in tight like a dinosaur coiling in on itself, so that you can't even straighten your fingers or let them pick up a cup. You can't pick anything up. You can't, and they just burn. Everything burns. The nerves, your hair hurts, your eyes hurt, in your mouth, around your face, everything just burns and is heavy. And to find something that takes all of those symptoms away and improves your cognitive abilities, because without them, you can't concentrate on anything because you're so busy concentrating on all these horrendous crushing chest feelings and not being able to do things, and that's just the physical side of it. We're not even talking about the mental strain on it, about how you walk down a street and taking a walk to the bottom of the road, I may look normal while I'm doing it, but I'm counting every step I take and I'm squeezing every muscle and I'm using my body in the best ability to make myself look normal to the rest of the world, because pity is the worst thing for bringing you down and making you depressed. Whereas somebody who sees you as happy and getting on with your life encourages you, and that gives you strength to fight as much as you can when you can.
Certainly, I can definitely vouch for that. Definitely, from any hard times that I've been through in my life, it does make it a lot harder if some people are pitying you. Which form of multiple sclerosis do you presently have then?
Right, now this is a dodgy area really, because when I was first diagnosed, they diagnosed me as relapse and remittance, and they did that without an MRI scan. They did that on electrodes attached to the brain and other lumbar punches, fluid on the spine and things like that. And then when I went on to the beta interferon trial for the disease modifying drug beta interferon injections, they had to do an extensive amount of MRI scans to put you in the correct category. And I was convinced, and so was my consultant at the time, Dr. Barry, that I would be in relapse and remittance. But when I came back from the scan, she was absolutely mortified. And she said, I can't believe this, Michelle, but you're actually in secondary degree progressive because of the damage that's already irreversible. And what that actually did was it actually put me backwards. It kind of made me become, like, I almost accepted that I was more disabled than I was acting, as I was acting to the world. And that was when I went downhill and ended up, you know, wheelchair shopping with my husband and really not moving about much at all and being very, very low. And I stayed on that trial as secondary degree progressive for 3 years with the injections until they did more brain scans and said, you know, we want you to come off this drug because it's actually making you worse. So at that point, I was classed as secondary degree progressive multiple sclerosis. Now, when I decided to come off all the trials and stop being a guinea pig, a long time went past, probably sort of 5-7 years or so, and I didn't get back in contact with the, apart from sort of Christmas cards and stuff to them, but I didn't go on any more trials. And then when I went back on another trial for a chemo drug called Clandidra, they did another brain scan and they said, we're going to put you in relapse and remittance. And I said, I personally think that's the wrong category because I don't relapse anymore. I have exasperations of symptoms because you can't actually relapse with the same thing twice. It's not classed as a relapse then. So all I have now is exasperations of symptoms because I've experienced such a range of the symptoms. So the damage is there. It won't be reversed. And to be honest, I don't think it matters to me whether it's relapse remittance or secondary degree progressive or primary progressive, because I really don't think they know enough about it to put everybody in the correct category with the little amount of scans that they do on people.
No, that sounds about right. And you were saying that when you're having these spasms or if it goes on for too long, that's when the damage becomes unrepairable, yeah?
Well, I mean, I don't know that for definite. It's kind of what I was told when I was at the hospital, that Dr. Jackie Palace told me that in her experience as a consultant of neurology in Oxford, that 3 years was, if you'd experienced the same deprivation or symptom of something for more than 3 years, then generally you weren't going to get it back. That was too damaged to repair.
Yeah. Okay. So how have you found it since you've been, how have you found your condition then since you've been using cannabis in comparison to before then? So what kind of differences does this, because you're so defiant about growing it. So why is that? What difference does it actually make to your quality of life then, Michelle?
Right. Well, the biggest difference is the mental and physical combined. Now, it doesn't fix all the symptoms. It's not a cure, but it's the best one solution that I found that keeps me mentally and physically stable and capable and independent. And this I've discovered from many years being on the prescriptions with different types of symptoms coming from the other drugs that I don't have now. So once I discovered that it was cannabis that was the beneficial thing here, I did research, obviously, to back up my own. Obviously, but the thing is, it's like the reefer madness side, isn't it? It's like everybody has these tales going around that it's going to send you insane. Well, regardless of the fact that I didn't believe that, I was stigmatized as it. So if I went out into the world, it was always like, oh, here's Michelle, she's got MS, she uses cannabis, you know, she's a bit crazy at times. But I was crazy before the cannabis. It had nothing to do with the cannabis, what my attitude and personality and character were like. That was there from a childhood. You know, my brother can tell you tales of crazy, crazy things that have got nothing to do with cannabis use. So if anything, the cannabis use keeps my mind stable and focused on life needs and things that I have to do in my life. So the only way that I could do this was to grow the cannabis myself, because buying it is you're beholden to other people, to the way they grow it. And it just wasn't acceptable to me financially either. I just couldn't cope with it. And when I met Ben Sturman, the device that we made to grow cannabis, the way that we did it together, I mean, we didn't purchase any cannabis for the whole year. And that was a complete first. We designed a system where we plant every 2 weeks and we cropped every 2 weeks. And they were small plants that were the correct strains for both of our medical conditions. And it served its purpose perfectly. We weren't dealing to the streets or anything. We were just self-medicating, just the same as growing my potatoes at home or growing the tomatoes or the strawberries or the peppers or anything else. It was just growing my own meds in my back garden and medicating myself, which to me was the safest and most, well, just the safest and best way, an organic way to treat my body after it had been through everything that it had been through. I'd given myself up to experiments with the government. I'd done my bit to try and help them find the pharmaceutical things. And to be honest, it helped because, as far as I'm aware, beta interferon injections are not used for secondary degree progressive multiple sclerosis at all because of the detrimental effects that it had on them. So, you know, that was good. It came out good. And I feel that I'd done enough for them. And then nobody was doing anything back for me, even though they'd given me the direction that cannabinoids were the way to go forward. to fix my condition the best. So I had no choice but to grow. And the reason I come out about it is because that I grew quietly for a long, long time, you know, just doing it myself. But it gets to a point where you're like, hang on a minute, there's Joe Bloggs down the corner and Steve and Ben and Jody over there, and they've all got these ailments. And the more you find out, the worse it gets for how much you know about this beloved plant that is just criminalized completely by the way it's wrongly projected to the world, you know. It's like the whole point with this whole cannabis fight with the court cases is the fact that they can't introduce it into the court in a way because they're being false about it, and they're doing the same to the people. They're not giving the true facts on what this plant can do. And the warriors of us that are out there doing stuff are just the only way to get this voice out there. So if I'm in a position now that my children have grown up, left home, you know, and I live in this place with Ben, in my flat with Ben, and we're both prepared to take the consequences of being vocal and coming out of the closet and saying, do you know what? Do your worst. Do you know what I mean? It's like, throw your worst at me because I'm fed up with the bollocks.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And it is a load of bollocks, really, isn't it? Because cannabis actually helps with your, you know, the cramping, the pain.
I'm not kidding you, Sarah. When I get up in the morning, right, I look like a dinosaur all crunched up. My daughter calls me crunched up dinosaur because I'm dragging my leg around, or I'm having a spasm, or it's just, you know, you can't explain it unless you live with me, because I don't let people see it. And there is a certain amount of a placebo effect when you're around new people. So you people are like, oh, she's fine, she was doing that. And it's like, yeah, I'm hyped up on the atmosphere and stuff, and I'm pulling in that energy. And I've learnt to move my muscles and keep them supple enough that I can always call on them, even though they do cramp up and go into spasticity and other horrendous things. You know, I can call on them at good times when I can get my mind in the right frame of mind. And the only thing that helps that is cannabis.
And, you know, so what do you do with the cannabis? How do you take it, and in what forms do you take cannabis?
Okay, this is, well, at the moment, my favoured way of taking it is in bud form. And I can vaporise it or smoke it. But at this very point in my life at this time, due to the fact that I've been raided, like, I mean, I did the first grow, we got that out. We did the TV show to prove the capabilities of what we were doing. The police took all of that away. I was so adamant that I was not going to let them think that they'd scared me in any form, shape or size. So I started to grow up again, and I was very vocal about it on Facebook. And yes, 7 weeks later, they came round and took those plants away as well. And I said to them when they let me out again, you know, I'm going to do it again, but I won't be vocal about it now because they are aware that A, I grow, B, I need it for medical purposes, and that, you know, I'm never going to stop growing. They're going to have to lock me up in a prison to stop me growing. So they're going to have to do something about it. So they've got to take me to court. You know, they've got no choice there at all. I'm not going away with this. It needs to be investigated. It's like even Prince Charles said in the 80s, you know, to somebody that he met with in a wheelchair with MS, you know, have you tried cannabis? I heard it's good for that. So the fact that in 2015, they're just ignoring all the facts that other countries have come up with and jumped on board with is ludicrous. And it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing for the parliament, to be honest.
My betting is that they've got a grow on in Buckingham Palace. I don't care what anyone says. I reckon they've got a big grow on in one of them rooms in that palace. And there's not a single doubt in my mind that they don't use cannabis themselves. Only any of these people in power that understand.
And you can guarantee that if one of them got cancer, they'd be straight on the oils, wouldn't they?
Without a doubt, not a doubt in my mind at all. And like I said, I bet they've got a really nice, good grow with all the latest technology in Buckingham Palace, mm-hmm. or even in the back garden in a few polytunnels.
Yeah, we'll see if she turns up at court and slaps me.
She might ask for some growing tips, Michelle. But yeah, you smoke it a lot though as well, don't you? Because it works very well for cramping and pain to smoke.
It does. I like to smoke it though, but because I think the reason I like to smoke it though, Sarah, is because I'm asthmatic. So for a lot of the time with my smoking, because I've smoked cigarettes over the years, you know, I mean, I'm still not opposed to tobacco now. I do like a bit of tobacco. I like the taste of it. I don't smoke cigarettes anymore, and I don't smoke full-on roll-ups, but I'm quite partial to a little bit of tobacco here and there. But the thing was that because I had asthma, I had it in my head that it was the tobacco that was killing me, and it wasn't. It wasn't the tobacco that was harming me at all. It was the way I was breathing, and it was also perhaps chemicals in the cigarettes themselves and chemicals in some of the tobaccos. But there are plenty of clean organic types of tobacco out on there on the market now that don't have that problem. I mean, in my last asthma check, I was 110% better than what they'd expected, and I haven't touched an inhaler for over a year. So smoking to me is kind of like a ritual. So it's not necessarily something that I would say, oh, this is smoking is for you. You know, this is something that works perfectly for me because I know how to inhale an inhaler. So I would inhale the smoke in the same way to dilate my lungs. And I find that my body reacts from smoking it with spasms and other things in the same way. But oils definitely work quicker for if I'm having a really bad spasm day and cramp day, then the oils cut in much, much quicker than or last much, much longer as well than what the cannabis does. And in the same respect, like at the moment, I'm doing quite well at the moment because the weather is quite warm. Although we've had some colder days, the actual temperature around England at the moment is very high. So that's having a very good effect on me. So I feel quite energized at the moment with... So I'm on hash at the moment, you know, so it's kind of, you can lower the grade. You don't have to stay on the higher stuff. You can come off and go on to hashes and stuff. I just find it easier to medicate myself and keep it an amount in with how I go through the summer and the winter. You know, seasons are the worst to change through. Weather changes. You said about the sensitivity earlier, you know, wind and rain together. You may as well be hitting me with a big paddle with spikes on it. It feels like that. So when people say you're a warrior for standing up to the politicians, I'm like, no. Once you've fought MS, nothing can take you down, because once you know the truth of real pain, you're not scared of the pain behind truth.
No, exactly. And you know, I'd really love to see you on a proper course of oil, to be honest. I've been hearing some great results for people with multiple sclerosis who actually do proper courses of oils along with supplementation as well and changes in diet and stuff. I'm sure you've looked into a lot of these things. But what I want to get on now, because we haven't got very long really, and this show is also about getting people to rally around, you know, and to actually you know, stand with you, Michelle. Yeah, because you are such a bright spark, and despite everything, you're still pushing forward, and you're still becoming that voice for lots of people who aren't capable of talking or who aren't in a position to. So, you know, like I said, I really do admire what you do and how you do stand up, because a lot of people who find out that they've got MS would probably just be like curling up in the ball.
All the people you do that for the first 3 years, I think.
yeah, exactly. You know, it's amazing. So we really want to get people to rally round. And Bob was talking a bit about this earlier on today. And, you know, you've come up with a few ideas as well, haven't you, Paul? Do you want to come in here now? I'll bring you in.
A few ideas. Let me just read something. I'm not the best reader in the world, as many people know, so... This is inspired by Paul Watson. Paul Watson was, or is, the captain of a group, well, a captain of a ship, which is now several boats, known as Sea Shepherd. And they broke away from Greenpeace some time ago because they thought that standing by and watching, taking photographs and putting it solely into the media just wasn't enough. They were individuals who took direct action. And so this is what's inspired this. Paul Watson could not just stand by and do nothing. He changed the way we think and the way we get things done. It came to me some time ago that within the groups, there seem to be four types of people. The do-nothings, the victims, the helpers, and the onlookers. Ask yourself who you are. Walking down a street, you see a man hitting a woman. They're on the other side. One, do you walk by and do and say nothing? Two, do you take out your mobile phone and call the police? And it does say police. Three, take out your phone and start recording. Four, cross the road and try to stop the man. Interact in some way. Five, run home and wait for the YouTube upload. The cannabis culture is very much like bikers clubs, Anonymous, or many other groups, and I've been a part or associated with many different groups. When we actually look at these groups, there seem to be individuals, and Michelle used a perfect example of this, that she did cross the road. We seem to annoy a lot of people within the groups that we're in. We seem to upset them. They can't seem to grasp why we're interacting with these other people outside our social group. A biker, a motorcyclist, so they say, and they all tell me, and I've witnessed this myself, will never ride past another biker if he's in need or she's in need. This is exactly the same camaraderie that the police have when one backs up his fellow officer. Anonymous, the group, where many of knows, they've kind of crossed this line. They seem to have an ability to be able to transcend across these mythical lines which are drawn between our society, the groups that we've been formed into, dividing us. They seem to, at least Anonymous, seem to have an idea of this. But behind those masks, often they are adolescents. I don't want to call them children, because in most cases they have got a greater idea of the truth than most adults I've ever met. So what holds all these groups together? What is it that's common amongst them all? Of course, I've already mentioned we have these separations within these groups, and some of us, like myself, I had crossed the road. I can't walk past. Okay, maybe a social disorder in the 21st century, but it's not something I'm prepared to apologise for. There is something between all these groups, whether they are army officers, policemen, ex or working policemen. And if anyone wants me to verify that I have worked in the supply of cannabis to working policemen's families, I will do. And if any of those officers want to try and step up against people, then I'm going to start releasing all the information I've got regarding Tameside Police Station, the undercover operations that I was involved in regarding gangsters, how I was actually physically assaulted by those very police that I am working for. Like Michelle, I've crossed over the road. I'm intervening now. And it's simple. It's really simple why there are people that will cross that road. And it's not because of the internet or ego. It's really quite simple. We cannot walk by. We have to stop. We have to cross the road. What's happening is not right. We don't need anyone to tell us. It's just what we do. Because it's wrong. Simple. Sometimes we do get hurt. Sometimes we do get injured. Sometimes we stop people getting hurt. Sometimes we do heal people. Sometimes we end up in court. Sometimes we don't. But it doesn't matter. None of this is relevant to us. Because if we're walking down the street and it happens again, we're going to cross the road. It's simple. Now, if you're out there and you're waiting for Michelle to go to court, get convicted or not, you're a spineless bastard. I'll confront you, every one of you, and I'll have no fear at all because you've no backbone, none whatsoever. Every single member of every cannabis group within the United Kingdom, at least, that knows about Michelle should be stood in front of her, not behind her. She's a brave woman, But she's a brave woman. Men, what happened to you? Waiting for Michelle? We're waiting for them? We're waiting for this? No. I will tell you, again, inspired by Captain Paul Watson. And this is to you, Michelle. You see, you are an international volunteer, so passionate and so steadfast, so determined and courageous, that it will take an armed force to stop your non-violent intervention on behalf of humans everywhere. You are an ordinary woman who has chosen to defend life compassionately. You are an individual that is willing to risk your life, your liberty and your freedom, your home, to oppose cruelty, to oppose harm, destruction and slaughter. The UK government are bloodthirsty killers, hiding behind the skirts of acts of law, media lies and cannabis groups still hooked to the government. Hooked. Staring right up to them, begging them for help. As that very governmently, thoughtlessly, without remorse, beats their chest like soulless creatures devout of empathy and decency. I salute you, Michelle. I really do. I salute you as a good, honest woman in a time which is fraught through dishonesty, through lies and cheats, and those that would sooner make a flag, go to a smokeout in your local park, sign a petition to your government, rally round. We are the cannabis movement. You should all be embarrassed. All be embarrassed. The fact that Michelle is there, the fact that you are, you haven't had some action, and shown her, whether it's personally, within your groups, working coordinatively together to bring this Misuse of Drugs Act, the very law that's been used against Michelle, that's persecuting her right now, do something. Stop with the flag making. You might as well just join those soulless, devout, empathyless creatures that we call government. If you do want to do something, stand up, begin the process. I don't think many of the groups will actually tune in to Dark City because they don't like what we've got to say.
The trouble is, do you not feel as well that there is, because I actually like the fact that the community has built, you know, I mean, I've been to some of these meetings, like Stoke is a great one as an example. I like it because if you cover up the S, you've got Toke Park, which was kind of like the sound off. And the first meeting I went there was only, there was only sort of six people there. But the second meeting we went to, there was like 50 people there. Now, if we went to that meeting next year and gave them, or you know, you could call upon those people, that would be a bigger community as well, wouldn't it? So I do see that there are good links as well.
I kind of disagree with you, Michelle. The thing about these communities building up, even when you've got like 50 or 500 people, take the UPA, for example. Look at the UPA, the work that's done on the ground by the sick and the scared, coming forward, making a stand in their own empowerment. I can't knock it, Michelle. I can't knock it. But then there's some people who are supposed to be the coordinators of such a group actually telling people they should go to the government. Now, to me, you've got them saying, on one sense, you people, stand up in your own power, speak the truth here in front of your peers. And then the other hand's telling them to go and ask these other people if it's all right to do what they've already done. To me, it's preposterous. I'm not saying there aren't good groups out there. There are good groups out there. But if you've formed a group and you think your group is a soul thing, and that, then it's an illusion, Michelle.
Yeah.
We're not groups. We're one species of humans and we live on one planet. This idea of religion, of governments and laws has divided us up and killed far too many of us for far too long. When are we going to grow up and say enough's enough? Well, you have. You have in your own way, and I can't dispute that. You know, I can't. We've spoken off air. I'm disgusted about the number of people who've come to Dark City who have told us blatantly, on and off air, they're going to help you. And when I ask you today, hey, lo and behold, they are lying bags of shit. Because when you tell somebody like Michelle you're going to help her and she's out there and you don't turn up, you are the problem. Not the government. Michelle can deal with them. I reckon she can. I reckon she can deal with the police. I reckon she can deal with authority. Listen to her. She's on here now and she's still strong and she's still powerful. She's trying to say to me, hey, Bob, you know, go a bit easy on them. You know, the good people. I know the good people. But they're eluded and deluded. And while they continue to be eluded and deluded and leading other people into that delusion that the government's going to do something, that the government tells the truth, that a court knows of justice. I have people telling me today, literally, Michelle, that they can't go to the courtroom because it's Michelle's courtroom. It's like, no, it isn't. It's public. I mean, they're just squirming about and hiding behind your skirt, dear. Yeah, they should be in front of you.
Anybody is welcome to come to my court cases. When the dates are up, I will be giving as much notice that anything that's going ahead, for sure. I would encourage anybody to come along. Not for me, but to empower them. You know, you say about this fear, Bob, and it's great. You've got loads of strength, you know, but there are people out there that are absolutely terrified. There was one incident, for example, I was with a particular friend where we had some plants in a car, and the police came along, and this particular person was that worried that he was going to get into trouble that he threw his lighter into the car because he thought he would be arrested for having a lighter on him. He'd become that oversensitive towards the unjust law that the lighter might link him to the fact that he didn't smoke cigarettes and it might link to the fact that he was smoking a cannabis joint. So the fear in these people for losing children, jobs, houses, homes is just unreal. Now, I'm doing this and prepared to lose my beautiful home for it. That still makes me draw a breath. But there you go. I'm going to do it because I really do think that this is unjust and it needs to come out. So, yeah, I do want as much support as possible because I'm not doing this for me. I'm doing this for everybody out there that needs to know the truth about this plant. That's why I'm doing it. So, yeah, I do. I'm not going to order people to come to come and support me, but I would love support for it. Yes,
that's you know, Michelle. Let me get this right. So me and you are on the same path, and everybody else gets that right. They don't need to ask you to come. They can turn up and support you in any way they like. Am I right?
Yes.
There you go. You've heard that on Dark City. So next time I go into a group and people turn around and say they're waiting for Michelle, I'm going to call you a shill. I'm going to call you a liar because it's not true. It isn't true. You don't have to wait for anybody to begin this process. Put a seed in a plant pot. That's all I've asked for people to do. That simple. I've not said a cannabis seed. I've said a seed in a plant pot and grow a plant pot and get ready. Get ready. We'll take our plants to the street. Not banners. If you want to demonstrate, make it active demonstration. An active demonstration. Make it something that they're going to have to arrest somebody for. Make it that way. If they want to play that way, we will fight them in court. And we've got to let them know that we are prepared to fight. Right to the High Court. We'll take them to the United Nations. And eventually we will see them for war crimes in The Hague.
Okay, Bob, you've just given me a really good idea, actually, as something. This has just suddenly come to me all of a sudden. I have decided...
Quickly, last 2 minutes, go for it.
I plant seeds all the time for my own plants. So I have decided every week I am going to go to the Thames Valley Police Station with a seeded plant of cannabis and leave it on their doorstep.
I would suggest people join you with empty plastic bags which smell of cannabis they found in the park, which they believe are paraphernalia. I would take empty joint stubs to the police station. And I mean, personally, if anybody out there could get hold of maybe a ton of horse manure, I would take that because hippies use horse manure for growing cannabis all the time. And it's paraphernalia you believe should be taken to the police and handed in and checked. I would go to any lengths. I really would, but I wouldn't tell them what you're going to do and when you're going to do it. Yeah, get organised, do what you're doing, Michelle, but pick a different police station randomly and let everybody know, you know, and let people travel and record their journey on the trains and the buses. Let them record that. Let us know about it. Come in and tell us about the adventure you have taking your plant to the police station. It doesn't have to be cannabis. An 83-year-old lady, you know, a pensioner can join in. Everyone can join in with this. But if we do, we need to be coordinated. We really do. Say goodbye, everybody. 30 seconds. Thanks again, Michelle. You're an inspiration.
Bye, everybody. And thank you ever so much, Dark City Radio.
Thank you, everyone. And tune in next week. We'll have another great guest for you. Bye. Thank you, Michelle.
Hey, we've got 20 seconds left. And this is from me. All right. I know you don't like hearing me, you lot out there. I know you don't. I know you don't like me turning up into your groups, right, and trolling you, okay, for selling yourselves out, for not empowering yourselves. But I ain't going to go away until you change it. You change it, I'll leave you alone. Simple as that. Action, no words.
An idea that exists in the hearts of everyone. To put the resources into the hands of the people. To increase the quality and benefits of their life. Let's remove the middleman. Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Dark City Compassion Club awaits you. It's your radio.